Okay, unlike the last speaker, I didn't change the title of my talk. But I did change the content. So what we've got going in northern Idaho is a fertilization, a paired fertilization and thinning study. And I'm going to talk absolutely zero about thinning because I put the presentation together yesterday. And actually because we got some interesting results from the straight fertilization trials. The question we asked to begin with was, can we modify the relationship between mountain pine beetle, its associated fungi, and its associated fungi by altering tree chemistry? The next question that came to our minds was, well, where exactly does the beetle get its nitrogen? How much does it get from the tree? How much does it get from the fungi it carries with it? So how involved are the fungi in larval nutrition? And then does the tree's nutrition play a role in that? So what we did was establish two field sites. One is at Craig Mountain in north central Idaho, where we had an ongoing infestation of mountain pine beetle. So we went into it and did our fertilization treatments in the infestation, in unattacked trees. The other is at the university's experimental forest, which they won't let me release beetles on, but I'll keep working on them. We applied fertilizer on an individual tree basis. I work with the Intermountain Tree Nutrition Co-op. They have a recommended amount of nitrogen to apply over different rock types. And we used their recommendation and then doubled it to try and basically overwhelm the tree with nitrogen. We measured interbark nitrogen content, measured resin flow as a defensive mechanism against the beetles, and then we measured, we're in the process of getting the data for the terpene content. Our controlled studies in the lab have focused on two of the primary fungi associated with mountain pine beetle. I have to read the first one, Grossmania clavigera, which used to be an Ophiostoma species. It was just recently reclassified into a new genus. And then Ophiostoma montium. I keep going to the mouse. Okay, the co-op that I work with a little bit started their studies about 14, 15 years ago, where they were applying different rates of nitrogen. And they referred to this phenomena as square death. When they applied nitrogen on the wrong rock type, virtually every tree in their nice square blocks were killed. Every host tree. And if you went to the adjacent block, none were killed. So it was, I showed up about 5 years after they started these studies. And I said, wow, you guys could have done a lot with this. But what they found is that there's a delayed response in the mortality in the fertilized plots. Usually starts at about 4 years. They also found that what they think is happening is the roots can't keep up. You apply nitrogen, too much nitrogen, and basically the roots get overwhelmed and it puts the tree into shock. So we've hypothesized that the fertilization benefits the beetle through fungal mediated nutritional gains. But stepping back just one step, if we use the rate that the Tree Nutrition Co-op recommends and apply the fertilizer roughly now or within the last couple of weeks before the snow falls, it gets transferred into the soil, picked up by the tree the following spring, and we get a really, really nice change in resin flow of the tree at the recommended rate on our soil type. If you double it, all of a sudden the resin flow goes back down. We think that what we're doing is measuring what the co-op said was an overwhelming of the roots capability of bringing the nutrition in. So okay, but what does that do to the inner bark? At Craig Mountain, where we had an ongoing infestation, we went in, took all of our measurements, on the inner bark. So the pre-fertilization treatments, this is all dry weight basis. So if the percentages look a little high, That's why. Go in, fertilize, take interbark nitrogen measurements afterwards, and we get matching the resin flow. We get a nice increase in interbark nitrogen at the recommended rate of 300 pounds per acre. And we do not see that when we move up to the 600 pounds per acre. Those were not significantly different, although there is an increase, they're not significantly different from the controls. When we went in then, and remember this was in a natural infestation, every tree that we fertilized, we also put a pheromone pack on, every tree was attacked. Several of those trees successfully defended themselves, kind of. We had a very low population pressure. So we only have data from, I think it's eight or nine trees, where we could go in, take larvae out the following year, and get nitrogen content on those larvae. So what this graph shows is the interbark nitrogen content on the x-axis and the larval nitrogen concentration on the y-axis. You see a nice, apparently linear relationship. What we did was just ran a correlation, get a nice significant correlation. So it told us, well, we're going in the right direction. But how do you tease this apart? Well, trying to get fungi out of the trees after they're attacked, we found out, is not as easy as it sounded. But we do know that there are nutritional benefits from the fungi to the beetle. Matt Ayers and his group had reported a positive relationship in the southern pine beetle system, where they hypothesized or suggested that the fungi are concentrating nitrogen. We're going to make that same conclusion in a slightly different way. And then Barb Bentz and Diana have looked at ergosterol content of the larvae. But our next question was, you've got this complement of fungi. Do they all perform as well as nutrient sources for the beetle? So what we did was we set up several side-by-side experiments with the fungi in the lab. And this is kind of an accumulation of two studies. One where we altered temperature, the other where we altered nitrogen content within the growth media. And you can see that Clavigera always accumulated, concentrated more nitrogen within itself than the Ophiostoma motium. So if the beetle is getting nitrogen from the fungi, it seems like that should be the one that's favored in an evolutionary scheme from the beetle's point of view, because that's where it gets the biggest bang for the buck. There's a strong linear relationship between nitrogen concentration in the growth media and the nitrogen concentration in the Clavigera. I was amazed when I saw this, to be honest. What we do is we modify the nitrogen content and try and keep carbon the same. So we've got a different carbon-nitrogen ratio. And with the Clavigera, I have to get used to the new name, we have this a nice, strong relationship between medium and fungus. It's a much weaker relationship and probably not a linear relationship with Ophiostoma motium. We need to do a little more analysis, but I think that's going to be a curvilinear relationship we see. And if you take even this curve out farther, we hypothesize that you're going to see it level off and then ultimately probably decrease as nitrogen content gets higher. But what's more interesting to us, or as interesting, is what happens when you change temperatures. We kept the nitrogen content in the media the same throughout this study, and reared the two fungi attempted to do it at four different temperatures. We've got the Ophiostoma motium, the one that doesn't perform as well as far as concentrating nitrogen within itself, able to be maintained to grow at a lower temperature. And if you notice, it's a significant relationship down, we get a decrease in nitrogen content as the temperature increases in that fungus, whereas we don't in the other. So we think that this has implications for how the beetle fungal relationship's going to perform, if you will, under a climate change scenario. And kind of the summary is we have found a way, we know we can modify resin flow and nitrogen concentration in the tree. The increased nitrogen within the tree results in increased nitrogen in the beetle. And then the question is that increase due to nitrogen in the tree or is it mediated by the fungus? We think it's the latter. Our next step to demonstrate one way or the other is to look at isotopic ratios of the nitrogen from tree to beetle. And with that analysis, we'll be able to tell you what the percentage of nitrogen the beetle gets from the tree versus what it gets from the fungus. And I heard beepers go off, so I'm up. Yeah.
So do you have any predictions on how the monoterpenes will change in response to your manipulations? And are you also going to look at carbon and nitrogen ratios?
We have all of that data in. We haven't had a chance to look at it yet. As far as how we think they're going to change, we don't have a clue. What we've done is we've got foliage samples and interbark samples from Douglas fir and lodgepole pine. The Douglas fir, one of my students, is doing, and we're further along on that. And the changes we're seeing, the significant changes, are in what most people would consider the minor terpene constituents, things like gamma terpenine. So I don't know what's going to happen in lodgepole, though.
Okay.
And I didn't make my bad joke about everybody being asleep.
Okay, thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it.